Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Yourself?
We're doing great.
Good.
Well, we got our returning guest, our regular guest, our Premier Ag Agronomist is back in the house with us in the podcast room. But before we get started, Glenn Longaball, we're going to start with the question of the day. Ryan, do you have the question of the day?
I do. Glenn?
Yes, sir.
Are you ready?
No, I'm not ready for this question. I framed this up about five different ways. I kind of wish you just hit me with this blind because...
Well, we will next time.
Yeah.
It won't be the same question.
Yeah, that's right.
We give you an hour.
Yeah. No. I'm trying to figure out how I would answer this question without showing my biases and potentially losing a job that I just took over.
All right. We'll stop you before you get too far down that. All right.
Good.
So your question of the day, Glenn, is if you could develop your own nation, what would be the first law you would put in place?
Yeah, that's a really tough one. And that would suggest...
These are meant to be fun.
I know.
Well, it is. Yeah, but for me, it's more serious than that, right? Because when you said that, you think about our Constitution, you think about the amendments to that, right? By their very design, they're very eloquent, and they were built by a group of individuals that were, they were... No other way to put it. They were a group of Christian men.
Yeah, they were inspired.
That were inspired to put together this framework of governance. That's not a democracy, right? It's a democratic republic, right? Because if it's just democracy, then it would be, mob rule. It would be, the mostest against the leastest, and yet what I'm reminded of is, initially there were parameters. We've had a lot of issues around voting rights, and you're trying to suppress the vote, and you're cheating, this, that, and the other. But, the founding fathers, they had a pretty tight method of selecting who could vote, right? And it was basically landowners. Now, to say today that we're only going to let you vote if you're a landowner would be pretty discriminatory, right? Because not a lot of people own very much property. But what they really were saying at the time, because the only taxes were property taxes, right, was that you had to have skin in the game. If you want to have a voice in how the pie is split, then you have to contribute something to the pie. And so today, what I would do if I was setting it up, I'd probably follow the exact same guidelines that our framers did, only I would say, look, the only way you can vote is if you are paying some kind of taxes.
If you got some kind of skin in the game.
In the game. Because ultimately, it is not sustainable when half the people in this country don't pay any taxes at all, and yet they have an equal voice in how it's spent. Eventually, those folks all end up on one side or the other. And then it's no longer sustainable.
Then you have a divided government. Country.
You have a really divided
country. That's
interesting.
Yeah. I didn't know we'd go that way. Ryan, you want to go next? You want me to go?
No, go ahead.
I like the right to bear arms. I think that, God created man, but Sam Colt made him equal. I forget where I read that. But,
yeah.
But I kind of like that way. But what's yours, Ryan?
It's similar to what Glenn was talking about, and it's a passage in Scripture as well. But the first thing is, if you don't work, you don't eat.
Yeah,
I just struggle with that, and I just think it's... That's very, very much a foundational thing that I would want if I were starting a new nation. Other than that, if we just want to talk about the degradation of today's society.
Yeah, we could change the topic.
Eliminate yoga pants on about 99% of the people that wear them.
Whoa.
All right, cut that.
I'm not worried about what I said now at all.
Yeah, you're fine.
I'm absolutely good.
Or you get to you make 500 laws and then you got to take one off the books when you make a new one, something like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So before we get too deep into this, though, Sal, I don't know if they can show it or not, but this thing over our table, we've now shot down four or five things that look like that, and we've had a Marine in the room for almost a year and a half, and we've not yet done away with this spy balloon-looking item that's in the middle of our table.
I think it's for lighting, though.
Is that what it is? I don't know. You can see this stuff on YouTube. Somebody's recording this.
TJI. Well, first, before we get started with our real topic, Glenn, show us how you prepared for this. Show them your notes. Yeah. Can we get, just got to say something so the camera will come over to you. But this is, this is So he goes, he showed us.
Thank God we did this after lunch. Yeah. We wouldn't have had anything to write on.
That's right. Yeah, this is actually my, this is not really a napkin. This is my Kleenex for this afternoon.
Perfect.
So, okay. Well, Glenn, get us started. What, what's on your mind? We're going into timestamp this. We are in about the Ides of March. We're about mid-March here in 2023 and getting ready to put a crop in the ground here pretty soon. And lots of global events, lots of some local events. So what's a, where's a grower's mind at right now?
Yeah, so
or I should probably ask you what you came to talk about because you just started preparing.
Yeah, well, no, I so I have thought in large part what you would want to visit about today, and obviously we're getting ready to put a crop in the ground, and we only get so many of those, right? Hmm. And so for our listeners that are familiar with agriculture, they realize that we have a fair amount at stake in every crop. But I don't remember. I don't remember what the average was. But the average farmer is somewhere like 40 or 45 crops is all they get to put in the ground in their entire livelihood, right? In their entire lifetime.
Yeah.
And when you consider that, if a farmer, you know, not everybody recognizes what's at play, right? So we have folks on the coast that believe that a farmer is an acre or 3 acres or 30 acres, right? Well, in the Midwest, the average farmer size is probably, of professional farmers, is probably somewhere around 2,000 acres, right? That means that they have, you know, somewhere around $1.5 million invested, and they're hopefully going to make $2 million or, you know, something in excess of $2 million in gross revenue to pay off all their capital expenditures and this, that, and the other. So, I mean, it is ultimately a big time for farmers, and some of them go into it very seriously, and there's some that go into it very nonchalant. And so for those growers that haven't, very few probably haven't picked their seed, because we put a lot of we put a lot of emphasis around seed selection, but there are growers that haven't come up with a herbicide program, or they haven't completely baked their fertility program for 2023, and it's time to make those it's time to make those motions, right? My peer to the north often uses sports analogies, right? Because he's more sports centric than what I am. But he often says, I'll never forget the first time I heard him say it, because it's like, wow, that's really profound. But it's a common saying, I think, that, you know, you cannot win a championship in the preseason, but you can lose a championship in the preseason, right? And so, you know, knowing it, what's at stake, and how few of these you get, right? Probably the better analogy is this is more like golf. You know, in my mind, you know, there's four major championships in the year, and yeah, there's a British Open winner, and there's a PGA championship winner, and there's a US Open championship winner. But ultimately, the guy that is almost most immortal is the guy that comes out of the gate early spring, right? When the azaleas and the rhododendrons are blooming down in Augusta, Georgia, it's that Masters champion. That's probably the single most important championship in golf, and it's the very first one out of the gate, right? And so, you know, it's not that you can't get off to a poor start and you know, manage that crop into a great, into a decent crop or even a good crop. But typically, to get a great crop, you have to start out perfect.
Because you can't fix that.
You can't fix it, right? If you don't get a stand, and oftentimes that's around planning, and sometimes that's just around decision making, right? I've seen some pretty, including myself, right? I'd like to think that I have really good judgment, but I'm telling you, when it gets spring, Ryan, and the ground is not right, right? You know that you want to go, you want to plant, but the ground's not right. The ground's not going to be ready for maybe 3 days, but they've got rain forecasted in 4 days.
All right, go.
Yeah, do you go? Do you plant a little bit on the heavy side and risk not getting a stand? Because there's are worse things than not getting a stand, right?
It's no stand.
Yeah. Well, getting no stand, you know, you say that. If you don't get a stand at all, then it's an easy decision to make, right? You just go in and you replant. But if you get a half-ass stand, right, that's probably the worst-case scenario, right? Something that, one, it embarrasses you, but two, it's never really going to have the top-end yield potential. That's the first field that you abandon, right? When it comes to in-season management, in-season management is not fun for growers to do, right? It's fun if you got a beautiful crop. You want to continue to reinvest and continue to reinvest. But if you start out with a lackluster crop, it is very difficult to want to continue to invest in that crop. And yet, if you want to have a decent crop out of a substandard crop to start with, it takes lots of in-season management, right? Mm. So it almost becomes, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right, if you start out poor. And oftentimes it's these really subjective calls. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. And so those are the things that kind of keep me awake at night. I mean, you know, if we go back to the farm, we talk about equipment, right? There's a few things that have to operate. You know, your tillage equipment probably doesn't have to operate. We over-till the ground for the most part, right? And I mean, for those guys that are practicing tillage, we probably do too much tillage. And then we have guys that do all no-till that probably need to practice some tillage, right? And not on every acre. But I put that pretty far down the list, right? What are the first things you need to do? Well, if you're doing your own applications, you probably need to make sure your sprayer is ready to go, right? If you, you know, if you want to hedge against being able to go in suboptimal conditions, you can't wait for everything to get perfect and then start filling tile holes, filling ditches, spraying burn down, right? You can't do all of those things simultaneous, hardly, unless you just have an endless supply of help, and then that's probably eating you up on the expense sure. side, right? So getting your sprayer ready, getting the floaters put on it, you know, you may not want to, you know, if you've got it winterized and you don't have a heated shop, right now might not be the time to go put a bunch of water in it, considering we still have a month of potential opportunities for it to freeze. But you can have everything else ready. And then ultimately, the number one piece of equipment on the farm, right, is the planter, right? I've often heard it said you really need two pieces of equipment that are stellar. One is a planter and the other is a combine. But without question, the one that is most important is still a planter. And, you know, we have growers that invest, you know, they'll buy a fairly late model planter, completely strip them down, add $150,000 worth of the inputs, right, into that planter. And because they've spent that, and they did it just last year or 2 years ago, it must still be ready to go, right? So they wait until the 11th hour to pull it out. And sometimes it's not the mechanical parts. And if anything, the mechanics of planters have become more simple with vacuum planters, right? There's less moving parts. But what isn't less sophisticated is running updates on your software and being able to record, you know, this data that we all, you know, haggle over to try to get cashed into my John Deere account or my, you know, climate field view account, right? So those are the things. I mean, personally, I can tell you that my planter's not ready to go, but I've had it out. And the little fescue spot next to the shop, it's got tracks all over it, right, where I'm making sure that everything's working. And because I don't want to be that guy that's, you know, at the 11th hour is trying to put it together because I've missed those windows, right? Every spring comes in windows. Rarely do we get a 2012 or even not last year, but 2 years ago, right? In 2021, we had a pretty decent spring.
Yeah.
2022, we had windows, and they were really short windows, right? So you think about it, we had, in my neighborhood, we had very little planted in early April. And right towards the middle, end of April, there was a time where it started to dry up. Some guys, you know, jumped the gun, got quite a bit in. You know, most were only got a little bit planted at the end of April. Most of the crop was planted in May, and some of it was even planted into June because of too much moisture. But these windows come. If it was simple, then anybody could do it, right? You have big wide windows, you know, and the ground gets perfect, and you can go from field to field to field. Man, that's tall cotton, and everybody wishes for that. But most times it comes in small windows, and it's actually very geographic, right? You may have a part of your farm that is getting really, really close. You may have part of your farm that's got standing water on it.
Yeah.
That part that's ready to go or almost ready to go, it becomes a no-brainer if the forecast is for above normal temperatures and below normal rainfall. But if they start forecasting 3 days from now, you know, a rainfall event followed by cold weather, man, it becomes really subjective.
Yeah, and that's hard to pick out because, I mean, just where we are, I mean, you could have in the same field. Part of the field can go, part's got almost standing water on it, and you either got to move equipment or you got to make choices. And sometimes it's hard whenever not all the choices, it's like the next worst choice. Trying to avoid the worst one. So
yeah, and so what's amazing is you can have people that make – you know, maybe not million-dollar decisions, but they make tens or $100,000 decisions on a regular basis that always are incredibly deliberate about how they think and how they do things that suddenly become totally indecisive. And that's really, that's a great time to have that person to reach out to, right? If you don't have a neighboring farmer that you, you know, a lot of times farmers are almost, you know, it's a competitive thing, right? Sometimes you need to have somebody that's away from you that you can rely on, whether that's your premier account rep, maybe that's Glenn Longaball, right? Your local agronomist, or maybe it's a fellow in a neighbor state that you met at a trade show, right?
Yeah.
It's really nice to have somebody to bounce those things off of, because in a perfect world, these decisions are easy to make. But when it's your money and the timing is likely to go against you and you're afraid that you're going to make this, you know, this stupid crop right out next to the state highway where everybody's going to see it.
Man, yeah, that's where you're going to start.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. This is the kind of pressure that farmers are under all the time. Right?
Those will be the ones you'll get with your sprayer if you do get a good start.
Yeah. For our listeners, anytime we get a new piece of equipment, whether it's a planter or whatever it might be, we always try it right by the state with the best road frontage just right there.
There you go. Yep. So you're asking what's on my mind. That's what's on my mind. Is there, you know, do the markets stress me a little bit? Absolutely. You know, I think we all wish we had sold more new crop even earlier than what we did, because the, you know, the market's been going against us a little bit. It seems like, you know, we gain back and then we have a big loss, right? And after that big loss, then we start eking back. But we never, it seems like right now with corn, we never gain back what we lose in those big movements.
Yeah.
Now, we're only one, you know, dirty bomb away from having a huge influence on prices over in the Ukraine region. Any kind of aggression over there will probably give us another opportunity to sell. But, I mean, I've heard different forecasts, right? And there are some forecasts that believe that we'll raise a huge corn crop this year.
Wow.
I've heard one estimate of as much as 95 million acres of corn. If we put that many acres of corn in the ground, it's really going to push down on, you know, it's really going to try to hold commodity prices down.
That's a lot of corn.
It's a lot of corn.
And they're projecting high yields too. They put high yields with it.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to forecast.
I can't see how they do that.
Well, yeah. So I think the consensus is that we've been in La Nina, and that's been really good for the Southern Corn Belt. Now we're going to go back to El Nino or somewhere in between, transition between the two. And I better not put my meteorologist cap on because I'm not very good at predicting, right? I just know that the neighbors and the, you know, if you go by the wives' tales, right, we had thunder in January, which typically means high water in July. And we've had, in some cases, this mild weather puts people back into the mind frame of, man, when the last time it was like this? And the last time it was like this was what?
12.
Yeah, 2012. Yeah. So these are the things that are on farmers' minds, and we can't predict those,
no.
Right? All you can do is be ready, right? and by the way,
Easter lilies have been blooming since Valentine's Day.
That's true. Yeah, the crocuses.
It's pushed in air hard.
It has.
The warmth.
So, yeah, if you guys were both growers, I would say, hey, get your planter ready. You know how I feel about soybeans and planting dates. If we've learned nothing else in the southeastern Corn Belt, it's that we probably should park the corn planter and start with soybeans, right? Soybeans seem to be more critical to planting date even than corn. And we tend to get much better windows in that April, you know, the end of April, first part of May time frame anyway. And that's how you get really good stands on corn, is maybe just delay that corn planting till we get to that ideal window and start and get the bugs worked out while we're doing soybeans. Because soybeans tend to be able to handle some pretty suboptimal conditions on the front end.
Has that changed, or do we just not know it? I mean, in the last decade or less, it seems like I don't know if it's the seed treatments or what we're doing, but that's counterintuitive to how we used to put crops in.
Yeah, and you know, it's amazing you put your finger on seed treatments, because I remember LBST, right? life before seed treatments. It was significantly.
Well, that's what we need is another acronym.
Yeah. Well, that
you
sounds.
You won't remember what that is next episode.
Well, you guys started it, right? When we started out with political questions, I thought that was the acronym that sounded the most.
Life before yoga pants.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Yeah. Well, we were going to cut that.
Yeah, let's.
We
cut
can't
that.
Cut that now because now you've referenced it.
I timestamped that.
But anyway, you are exactly right. One of the things that's changed. One, there's really an interest in high yield soybeans, and two, before we had seed treatments, growers had to hedge their seeding rates, right? Because it was so hard to get a stand without seed treatments. And when I say seed treatments, I'm talking about a full complement of fungicides and a seed applied insecticide, right? Before we had those things, we replanted a much higher percentage of our soybean crop than what we do today, right? And so being able to predict that we're going to get a higher percentage of the soybeans we plant out of the ground has led us to this point where now we can plant a more optimum rate. And we found that planting, you know, lower rates typically ends up giving us what? It gives us more uniform stands, gives us more light interception, and ultimately helps us make higher yields. Right? As long as we manage everything else.
All right. What else? Is there anything else? I don't know what we're doing on time.
Yeah. No, I mean, need to get ready for spring. Planters, sprayers, tillage equipment, that sort of thing. Don't forget your peripheral stuff. You know, when I say planters, I mean, we automatically think, well, you know, do we have all the brushes in the planter? Do we have, you know, are all the plates in? Are we, you know, are the disc openers ready to fall off? You know, those are kind of the obvious things, but that's not normally what keeps you from going to the field. You know what keeps you from going to the field? Is that starter system that you are begrudgingly wanting to go calibrate, right? That's the things that kind of scare you as an operator. It's not the hardware. Most of us do pretty good about, you know, if it needs new disc openers, we go put new disc openers on. What we tend to kind of procrastinate on are the things that require maybe a little bit of math, right? And, you know, putting starter or putting something in the starter tank and actually making sure that it's putting it out. And you're saying, you know, if that's a electric pump, that's pretty simple. You turn it on, hit the whisker switch, and you hear it going, then you you've calibrated it with a.
And I quote.
I knew that would get you. Yeah. Then you're probably good, right? If it builds pressure and you know what you run at like 4 PSI, right? You have a history with that planter. Sometimes where it becomes more subjective, and I've seen this myself, is not with positive displacement pumps like John Blue, but with diaphragm pumps, right? Like a High Pro, oftentimes over the season, right? We just leave fertilizer in them because that works pretty well as a winterizing agent. But over the winter, it salts out. Now the diaphragms don't work as freely. They still are pumping up and down. They're still moving material, but it's not positive displacement, right? It's still, there's slippage. And because you've maybe lost some of that volume or the diaphragm has hardened, now you don't get a full stroke, right? You know, used to, one stroke was 1X, and when you turned it twice as fast, you got 1.8X,
easy
right?
Peasy.
You know, it's not 2X like a positive displacement pump, but it's 1.8X. You add a little salt to that or some gel from a lot of the 1034-0 over the winter will gel. You add a little bit of gel to that, and suddenly it's 1.5X, right? So now your rate has changed. But, you know, those are the things that if we miss a window, it's oftentimes because be more politically correct, we're screwing around with things that should have already been done.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
And anyway.
So in the essence of time, we're sort of running a little short, but so we'd have the big change on dicamba application. Anything that you tell somebody at this time of year to change going into their beans, their bean plant, planting plans?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're going to have some upcoming meetings to talk about both high-yield corn, high-yield soybeans, and there are some prerequisites, and one of them is weed control. You know, I don't care whether you're in the Enlist system or the Xtend system. Obviously, the Xtend system is a lot more restrictive, and it's become more restricted, right? Which we just found out in the PARP meetings last week. And but what I would say is, regardless of your trait platform and what you're going to do in season, still the foundation of good weed control, Ryan, is using overlapping residuals in the beginning of season, right? It's those residual products that exploit the fact that weeds are a lot more sensitive to chemistry when they very first emerge, right? They're kind of weenies when they first come up. Even water hemp is very easy to kill when it's just two itty-bitty, teeny-tiny cotyledons, right? You let it get up to 4 inches, and now it's gotten a lot harder to kill. And by the time it gets to be 10 inches, it's almost an immortal creature, right?
For sure.
Takes a stake through the heart on a full moon or something.
Yeah, and they grow so quick whenever they're those little cotyledons, and then the next day they're an inch tall. So.
Yep. So, yeah.
All right.
That's what's on my mind.
Great. And they can always contact you.
Absolutely.
And or the account managers or whatever, which is probably ranked right up there with the most important tools we have on the farm this time of year. Somebody who knows.
Yeah, well, we try to keep the account managers, trained up, and most questions they can answer, straight away.
Just came off some really successful grower meetings, a lot of well-attended grower meetings. So
absolutely.
And they should have a lot of tools in their toolbox.
They do. So. Although we spend a lot of time in this particular meeting talking about biologicals and all of the – basically talked about all the pitfalls, all the traps that are out there for growers, and probably spent more time on what not to do than what to do. So that's why we thought we better have another group of meetings. But
go back with what to do.
Yeah, go back with what. Yep. What are the foundations? How do you really build a high yield crop, whether that's corn or soybeans? We've spent a lot of time on soybeans the last couple of years. I think it's time to go back and refresh, guys, on how are we going to manage, all the prerequisites, right? Seed selection, getting off to a good start with your planter, a good herbicide program to ensure we don't have a lot of crop competition, or that we have a lot of competition with the crop. And then in-season nutrition, and we've spent a fair amount of time on crop protection, like fungicides, insecticides, that sort of thing. So probably more on nutrition.
Very good.
In this group. So.
All right. Ryan, do you have anything else?
I do not. Glenn, thanks.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know what we'll title this after we come through with the first question of the day, so I don't know if we'll put any of those in the title.
We had a chance until you referenced the beginning. Spring, in the middle.
Spring fever, maybe.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank all of our listeners and watchers on YouTube. And if you enjoy it, please like and subscribe. And that's another episode of The High Ground brought to you by Premier Companies.
Thanks.